This LiveWell talk on spinning babies to reduce cesarean section rates. I'm Dr. Dustin Arnold, Chief Medical Officer at Union Point Health, St. Luke's Hospital. There are many reasons why an expecting mother may need to receive a cesarean section. Joining the podcast today is Rachel Peterson, who has been a labor and delivery nurse at St. Luke's Birth Center for the past 24 years and an obstetrical outreach coordinator for the previous 13. She recently was involved in a statewide project aimed at reducing cesarean section rates and is here today to talk about one of those tools. St. Luke's has recently introduced a program called Spinning Babies, which I have no idea it is what it is. So I'm really kind of excited about this. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Before we start, why are C-sections bad?
Well, it's not that they're bad. It's just that if they're necessary, absolutely, we want to do them. But they just can lead to other problems like more risks for hemorrhages, more risks for in future pregnancies, more risks for, improper placenta, how it adheres to the uterus. And so
we can get problems with
that. Yep, for right. sure. It's a longer recovery time. So it's a little bit harder for mom. It's a longer recovery time. And what they were finding was that over the course of the last, 20, 30 years, C-section rates have nearly doubled. And so what also they looked at was that the neonatal outcomes and weren't really becoming any better. Like they weren't making those better outcomes. The risks for cerebral palsy were still there, or the rates for cerebral palsy were still there. And then people were having other problems, like more than likely if you have a first C-section, you're probably going to have a repeat C-section. We're trying to do more VBACs. People, come in after they've had a cesarean and try to do a vaginal delivery. There are some risks with that as well. But the more C-sections you have, the higher risks for all of those problems, like postpartum hemorrhage, improper placenta adherence. You get placenta accretas, which can cause even more problems and more hemorrhage risks and that kind of thing.
I know two things. I don't know a lot about labor and delivery and obstetrics, but I know where babies come from. So I know three things. I know that we pay attention to our C-section rate.
Yeah.
And we have a very good C-section rate here at St. Luke's. And I know that everybody is on their toes when it's previous C-section and you're going to have a trial of vaginal birth after C-section.
Right.
I know everybody. Right. So that's my extent of the obstetrical world right there. So it makes sense why you try to.
Yeah. So if we can try to decrease that first C-section, then maybe we can decrease our overall C-section rate. We joined the IMQCC, which is the Iowa Maternal Care Quality Care Collaborative, in January of 21 to try to introduce this project and try to decrease our primary C-section rate for our low risk moms. So they titled that decreasing the NTSV, which meant you were a first time mom, hadn't delivered a baby greater than 20 weeks. You had a term baby, 37 weeks, and you were vertex. So the baby was head down, not breech, and it was singleton. So that was a low risk group of patients that across the nation seemed to be the highest, rise in C-section rates. And they thought no matter what kind of a hospital you were in, people who did low amount of deliveries, people who did high amount of deliveries, that rate for the NTSV population was sort of similar, and that their C-section rates were sort of similar. So
and NTSV stands for?
For nulliparous, term, singleton, and vertex. So just a
not
low
pregnant
risk
before
pregnant.
Term.
Not delivered a baby. So you could have been pregnant before, but you haven't had a vaginal delivery.
First delivery.
Yeah. First delivery.
At term.
Mm-hmm.
Head down.
And single baby.
And then there's just a single baby.
Yep, just a single baby.
Okay.
So with that population, we could work with them to see what can we do to, promote a lower C-section rate with those people and not cause any adverse neonatal outcomes or maternal outcomes by, trying to decrease this rate. And so what our goal was to reduce it to 21.2% over the course of an 18-month project. So we embarked on this with a rate of 29.9% for our NTS VC section rate. So that's taking out anybody who was breech, anybody who had a previa, anybody who was high risk at all.
Right.
And we worked on what kinds of things, what was driving our C-section rates to be higher. And what we found was that it was like labor dystocia. So people who would start labor and then get stuck at maybe 5, 6, 7 centimeters, whatever.
And max centimeters is?
10.
10.
Yep. And then the other one was for fetal intolerance to labor. And so we looked at those and we decided what kinds of things. And the IMQCC held learning sessions and helped us with this. And we thought, and they gave us ideas of what we could do to help decrease that rate. And one of the things was labor dystocia was probably our biggest number. And it varied so much between even physicians. Like, how long do you wait for somebody to dilate to 7 centimeters or, you know, to go to the next centimeter before you decide enough is enough? And so they gave us guidelines to follow that were evidence-based from the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine and ACOG. Both of those gave us labor dystocia guidelines. And then another tool that we used was Stephen Clark's algorithm for category 2 fetal heart rate tracings. And that just means you've got some sort of abnormality in your fetal heart rate tracing, showing us that baby's not tolerating labor maybe. Well, this was kind of an algorithm to follow so that we could have a way to manage those heart rate tracings when we knew, okay, enough is enough. This baby's not tolerating labor. Instead of leaving it up to each individual physician or group to decide when enough was enough. And so this was all evidence-based information. And I think that's super important because that's how you get buy-in from all of your staff and your physicians to make sure it's evidence-based.
Well, and I think also the way we staff OB here from a physician standpoint allows for a greater degree of continuity through that labor than... doctors are going back and forth before clinic or, or smaller hospitals with maybe a family practitioner that is, you see that your C-section rate goes up dramatically after hours.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Right. So, you know, we have doctors dedicated to being over there taking care of these
patients.
Yes, they're on call
to our hospital.
Right.
Yep.
Where if you have them where they're multiple covering, just subconsciously, that's human nature. You might pull that threshold to say, okay, let's, you know, we're not progressing. Let's get it done. Just because you have other things that are to need your attention.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, so.
Yeah. And one of the great things about this hospital is that we allow one-to-one nursing for our labor patients. So we always have one nurse with one labor patient. And they get bonded. You know, you bond with these patients. You're with them for 12 hours, sometimes a little bit longer, maybe 2 days in a row with labor patients. And so to get the physicians and the nurses to all buy in to, hey, what can we do as a team together to make, you know, to help decrease this C-section rate? That was really important. And well, so
let's talk about spinning babies.
Yeah.
Now, before I walked in the studio today, I thought, is this some sort of Peloton spin class, cycling, what, you know, what?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Right? So tell me, what is spinning babies?
Well, spinning babies is a, it's kind of a big collection of movements and position changes for patients to do. They can start as early as like 36 weeks in pregnancy at home doing some of these movements to help get their bodies ready to be in labor and to help that baby move through the passage way from, you know, early labor onto birth, moving through and rotating appropriately so that it fits through the pelvis better, easier. It's kind of like a physiologically based movement collection of movements that helps to move that baby through easier and make the birth process easier.
And the plan is to get the head down.
Well, the head should be down when we start. I mean, if you are laboring, some places may do like breech vaginal births, but we don't do that here. But the hope is to help people. We do a lot of inductions of labor. And so.
Meaning you electively, they know they're coming in and you start the labor process.
Yep. They know they're coming in. And so having them be not making it so medical. So it's kind of like a natural and medical comes together and works together to make the best outcome for this patient. And we do a series of movements, keep people up as long as we can. There's many movements that you can do by standing, using towels over a door to do like stretches and open up the pelvis. There's lots of things we can do after they're in labor too, and they have epidurals. We can move them. It's important to move them every 20 to 30 minutes to keep the baby from getting stuck in one spot and not rotating. And that if there's, you know, if they don't rotate and come down, then the cervix doesn't want to dilate as well. So there's just a lot of these movements that really help that before we started all of this, a lot of times we would let people sleep 2 or 3 hours, you know, and we'll still let people rest after they get their epidurals. But you don't want to keep a person in that same position because then you tend to have a baby that stays in one position too and doesn't move as well. And so this helps people to dilate, helps to loosen up the ligaments and everything that supports the pelvis and the uterus. And we have found that a lot of times it really, really works. I mean, it works really well.
Where did this start? I mean,
so it started, Gail Tully is a nurse midwife in Minnesota, and she started it like in around 2000. So it's been around quite a while, and it's all evidence-based. It's very midwifery, sort of doula. Like they have a lot of that group of people, helping with this spinning baby's movements, I guess. But you can incorporate it into any birthing facility and it works really, really well. And we've got lots of people who want to be more, you know, up and moving, and natural is, you know, the way people want to go. And it kind of helps, it empowers nurses to help the patients, and it empowers the patient to have the kind of delivery that they want. So yeah. And it's non-invasive. It's something that can just be taught, you know, to our nurses. And they also have a website that you can go to, and there's parent classes so that people can learn about it before they come in labor and do these things to help prepare their body even up to 4 weeks before they come in for labor. So
it's a series of stretches and exercises that can benefit that.
Yep. And you can use labor balls. There's different, you know, like sheets and towels that you can use to help kind of jiggle and relax a person's body. They've got it all down to the physiological level where, you know, even we do one called the jiggle, like we put people on in a sideline position. We call this sideline release, and this is sort of the beginning of what we do, is to try to relax all of the muscles and tendons to allow that pelvis to open up and allow that baby to rotate as it needs to come down and be in the proper position for birth. So
is there a patient population where we'd say, no, you shouldn't do this?
Absolutely. Those people with high-risk pregnancies, people with really extremely high blood pressures, it doesn't mean that they can't do any of the movements, but there's some of them that they can't do. Like one of them is a forward leaning inversion where you actually are on your knees and you lean down, like say you're on your knees on a couch and you lean down. This is to help maybe reposition a baby that's asynclitic and not in the right position, or a breech baby. At 36 weeks, you might start, if you have a breech baby and you want it to turn head down, then they recommend doing this a couple of times a day for, you know, a week or two to see if we can't get your baby to rotate to the right position. Hmm. And so if you have a previa, if you have a extremely high blood pressures, anything like that, that would
cause you. You need your physician or clinician to sign off on this before you start.
Definitely
typing into the Google box and coming up with spinning exercises. Yeah. You should really be sure that
on their website, it will tell you
okay
to make sure that you check with your doctor to see that these movements are okay with you.
Well, this is kind of, this is kind of clever and it makes sense, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean that movement's good.
Yeah.
You know, I had a, attending Dr. Packy, who's still in practice in inner city Detroit. He's got to be close to 90. But, you know, he used to say, get your patient out of bed, patients die in bed. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was what he was just trying to say, get your patients moving, you know. And so movement's good.
Yeah.
Whether it's Tai Chi or just walking or stretching.
And for years, people, I mean, when I first started 24 years ago, my preceptor told me the worst thing that we can do is tie a patient to the bed and expect them to get into labor and be in labor and that kind of thing. And absolutely, there's reasons people should be in bed for labor and delivery and high risk ones, for sure. But the ones that aren't, there's so many different movements that we can do. And even after they get their epidural and they become, you know, immobile and can't move around, there's so many different positions we can do with them in the bed. And with, we have like different size peanut balls, which are like exercise balls that are shaped like a peanut, or even just the round labor balls that they can do while they're in the bed. And we have a labor bar that goes across the bed that can be used for different positioning, different positions for even pushing.
What was there something, I mean, you've had a lot of experience with labor and delivery. That's been your specialty. Was there an experience that you had or patients had that you said that motivated you to be interested in this?
Well, just decreasing that whole NTSV rate. Maternal morbidity and mortality has taken a rise across the United States. It's one of the things that bugs me the most, because I think we're in the best nation in the world. Why are we having so much maternal morbidity and mortality? And part of it's related to C-section rate. So it's just the IMQCC just became this unit that we, or this, I don't know exactly what to call what they are, but they got a grant where they were able to hold all of these learning sessions for us to learn more about why do we want to decrease the C-section rate? How will this help decrease maternal morbidity and mortality? And so that in itself was like becoming a part of that group was so important, because then we had some help to learn how to do this project. How do we talk to the physicians? How do we teach the nurses? People who've been doing this for 20 years, they're going to be like, are you kidding me? We've been delivering babies for 20 years and it's been fine, but it really hasn't. If you look at all of our stats nationwide, there's things that we can do to improve our care. And this spinning babies, it's non-invasive. It's, you have to take a class through spinning babies in order to learn these things, and then you can come back and teach another person these things. But like for me, I can't take that information and like teach our whole unit. So we do a lot of one-on-ones with people, and our new labor nurses all come meet with us so that we can show them these movements, because it's important to make sure that they all know them. I mean,
just to be clear, you don't have to go to Northtown Schwinn and buy a bicycle.
No.
This is not that type of spinning.
No, it's not. No. And we purchased labor balls and some different birthing balls that we can use to help position our patients. But mostly it's hands-on. It's learning how to relax the patient.
You know, it's interesting that you, Dr. Abramson, who's a friend of mine, retired gastroenterologist, but he was telling me how the human microbiome, your gut microbiome, that you have, you probably got it when you are born through a vaginal delivery. And that will influence health later in life. You know, they're tied to cancers, obesity, that might be influenced. So it's interesting that having a C-section, not naturally, you might have a different gut microbiome, which, you know, so you're not only preventing morbidity and mortality with the maternal aspect, but possibly also the child later in life. It's,
right.
You know, it's just starting to scratch that area, that field of research with a gut microbiome and how it's formed. You know, we say that, you know, like you and I are probably about the same age. You know, we ate dirt and weren't allergic to anything. Now kids now, you know, they have hand sanitizers and they are allergic to everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's interesting how those small things can have significant consequence.
Yeah. And I think later for patient life. Satisfaction as well, like, women come in generally wanting to have a vaginal delivery.
Right.
And I feel like they think that, you know, if they don't have this vaginal delivery, they don't get their badge of honor or whatever for carrying this child.
And I'll say this from working in the wound clinic, you know, occasionally we'll get very rarely you get a wound infection or wound dehiscence from a C-section.
Right.
You know, and that's just the last thing the mom needs to be dealing with is a non-healing surgical wound with a new baby. You know?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. And it's harder to care for a baby too with a C-section incision.
Yeah.
But I mean, can people do it? Absolutely. And when they're needed, we want them to be available and we want people to be really good at it. And we are really good at it here at St. Luke's for sure. But there's some other options that we can do to help out. And that was spinning babies was one of the tools that we could use. And I think it's been really good. A lot of the nurses are really doing many movements with people. And even if we get to the point where we've done every movement under the sun that we can think of, and this baby's just not going to make its way down, then at least we know we've given it the old college try. Yeah. You know, we have done everything that we can. And the patient feels like I did everything I could. And the ultimate goal of every delivery is a healthy mom and healthy baby.
Right.
And so that's not being, you know, replaced by spinning babies. We still want that same outcome. But this is just another option. And it's like really non-invasive. And I think it helps you bond with your patient too, because there's a lot of hands-on that we do. There's some, once you put them in these sideline movements, you try to do this movement called the jiggle. And it's just a very light, almost a vibration that helps relax like all of the fascia that's, you know, attached to all of the muscles. And this relaxes the whole mom's body, and it can give us maybe even... They talk about how it can give maybe 1 centimeter difference, or different positions of the legs can help open that pelvis just 1 centimeter. And that's all it takes for a baby to rotate to the right position.
Wow.
And so it's tiny little changes, but if that can help, you know, we're willing to do it. And, you know, you can do it one-on-one with your nurse. Sometimes we get dads to kind of help us too. And that's good too, getting the whole family kind of involved in that process. But overall, I think it's been very good and very well received. So,
well, I think when you realize what big things can happen from small changes, you realize there's no small changes that,
yeah.
you know, this is, and it feels good
mm-hmm.
to do something for your patient that doesn't involve a medicine or surgery.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, I mean, that at the end of the day, you feel pretty good about that. I think most of us.
Oh, yeah.
My surgical friends may criticize me for that. But, you know, why did you get in labor and delivery?
Oh, gosh. It's all I've ever wanted to do.
Really?
Yeah. It was the only thing I wanted to do when I hit nursing school. My nursing instructor, the first one I ever had, she's like, well, if all you ever want to do is labor and delivery, you should not become a nurse. And I was like, no, that is all I want to do. It is all I want to do forever. And ever since, and I became a nurse after I had my own kids. And I think it was their birth that made me want to be a part of that. And it's an awesome thing. I mean, you're part of usually the best part of a start of a family. People remember you forever. Not that I need that, but I have helped deliver many of my friends' babies. And now I've been in it long enough that a couple of their babies are having babies.
Yeah, I bet that's pretty cool.
And so that's a really cool thing, yeah.
For me, I was a third year medical student. I was in Detroit, and first delivery that I was like in there to do it, the amniotic fluid all went in my shoe, and I said, nope, not doing this. And that made the decision for me. And I haven't regretted it, but no, you guys do some amazing things. And you're right.
Yeah.
You know, the technology and the training, and it does get, when you hear about infant morbidity mortality and maternal fetal infant mortality, it's not that we're bad. It's just that we should be the best.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because you just know how. With the resources we have, and I share your frustration at times when you mm-hmm. hear that. You're like, why?
Yeah.
And so, and it might be something, a small change might lead to big outcomes.
Absolutely.
Which is what it's all about.
Yep.
Well, Rachel, thank you again for joining me and informing our listeners about spinning babies and how that can help reduce the cesarean section rates. Once again, this is Rachel Peterson, a labor and delivery nurse and obstetrical outreach coordinator at St. Luke's Birth Center. If you'd like to learn more about our birth center, visit our website at unipoint.org.
Thank you for listening to Live Well Talk On. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your family, friends, neighbors, strangers about our podcast. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, be well.